All right. Well, it's I call it the annotated hashish eater because I've added about 500 notes to it in the course of it. It's a hypertext book done in a CD-ROM. And whenever Ludlow reaches into his bag of tricks and pulls out a literary allusion from the 19th century canon, or decides he's going to dive into Greek and give you something directly from the Greek Old Testament or whatever, I've got an annotation there that says, here's what he meant. Because I think it would have been a very, very challenging book for somebody in the 19th century to read. For somebody in the 21st century, it's extremely challenging because what was a canonical poet back then is a very obscure poet today. And some of the language that he used then was probably obscure and difficult even at the time. And it's a book that I loved the first time through, and the more I dug into it, the more I found out what he was saying and why he was saying it, who he was alluding to and why, just the better the book became. I also wanted to, in this edition, show some of the other texts about hashish that were circulating around the same time. So I have things like, there's a poem by John Greenleaf Whittier called The Hashish. There's W.B. O'Shaughnessy's medical treatise that I talked about earlier from 1839 that really introduced hashish or Indian hemp as a medicinal treatment to the West. Some of the medical texts that Ludlow himself refers to in the course of The Hashish Eater as having given him advice on what dose to take and whether it was going to kill him or not. And just some of the other articles that were in the press around the same time. Curious Drugs for Producing Hallucination is one fascinating article. The Living Corpse is a short story that was published in 1853. It's got it's very odd and it's anonymous. Unfortunately, I'd love to know who wrote it. It's full of allusions not only to hashish but to a bunch of other drugs, and it's very horror gothic in the sense of like a Frankenstein or something. But anyway, all of these are included as part of the CD-ROM and cross-referenced where they need to be. A lot of times they'll refer to each other or allude to the same source texts.
I was delighted to find when I was reading the annotated hashish eater, and I got to the part where Ludlow mentions that he's sitting in the apothecary and he's thinking about taking this stuff, but he wants to read up on it. So he reads this text and he mentions the text, and I can click right on that name of the text right there, and it brought me to the text he was reading, and I could read the same thing that he was reading while he was sitting there in the apothecary thinking about taking hash.
Mm-hmm.
That was a real delight for me. So I wanted to thank you for that.
I'm glad you liked it.
So if people want to get a copy of it, how do they do it?
They can go to sniggle.net/Ludlow, with a capital L, L-U-D-L-O-W. Or if you do a Google search for annotated hashish eater, it'll pop up there eventually.
Thanks for being on the show, David.
You betcha.
Thanks
for
David.
Me. So that was David Gross. He's the editor of the Annotated Hashish Eater, which is a republication of the original hashish eater by Fitzhugh Ludlow, the man who inspired a revolution of hashish dens across North America shortly after 1857.
Okay.
Let's go to a
this is a tidbit. This is George Carlin with a piece called Penis and Missiles. But so if you're tender of phallus, be careful.
Thank you. Been a little while since I've been here, and a couple of things have happened in that time. I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings, too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car. Can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a fuck. Got no steel industry left. Can't educate our young people. Can't get health care to our old people. But we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Huh? We can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit, that's our fucking job. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown. Now, you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded. Me? I look at war a little bit differently. To me, war is a lot of prick-waving, okay? Simple thing, that's all it is. War is a whole lot of men standing out in the field waving their pricks at one another. Men are insecure about the size of their dicks, and so they have to kill one another over the idea. That's what all that asshole jock bullshit is all about. That's what all that adolescent, macho, male posturing and strutting in bars and locker rooms is all about. It's called dick fear. Men are terrified that their pricks are inadequate, and so they have to compete with one another to feel better about themselves. And since war is the ultimate competition, basically men are killing each other in order to improve their self-esteem. You don't have to be a historian or a political scientist to see the bigger dick foreign policy theory at work. It sounds like this. What? They have bigger dicks? Bomb them! And, of course, the bombs and the rockets and the bullets are all shaped like dicks. It's a subconscious need to project the penis into other people's affairs. It's called fucking with people! So, as far as I'm concerned, that whole thing in the Persian Gulf was nothing more than a big prick-waving dick fight. In this particular case, Saddam Hussein had questioned the size of George Bush's dick. And George Bush had been called a wimp for so long. Wimp rhymes with limp. George has been called a wimp for so long that he has to act out his manhood fantasies by sending other people's children to die. Even the name Bush. Even the name Bush is related to the genitals without being the genitals. A bush is a sort of passive secondary sex characteristic. Now, if this man's name had been George Boner, well, he might have felt a little bit better about himself and we wouldn't have had any trouble over there in the first place. This whole country has a manhood problem. Big manhood problem in the USA. You can tell from the language we use. Language always gives you away. What did we do wrong in Vietnam? We pulled out. Huh? Not a very manly thing to do, is it? When you're fucking people, you gotta stay in there and fuck them good. Fuck them all the way. Fuck them till the end. Fuck them to death. Fuck them to death. Fuck them to death. Stay in there and keep fucking them until they're all dead. We left a few women and children alive in Vietnam, and we haven't felt good about ourselves since. That's why in the Persian Gulf, George Bush had to say, "This will not be another Vietnam." He actually used these words. He said, "This time we're going all the way." Imagine an American president using the sexual slang of a 13-year-old to describe his foreign policy. If you want to know what happened in the Persian Gulf, just remember the names of the two men who were running that war. Dick Cheney and Colin Powell. Somebody got fucked in the ass. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Now, if that doesn't break some CRTC rules, I don't know what doesn't. We hope we didn't offend anybody, but let's face it, what he was saying was downright truthful.
Well, if that isn't an offense, I don't know what is.
Yeah. But anyway, if you were offended, we're sorry, but the truth sometimes hurts, especially when it comes to war.
Especially when it's up the ass.
Oh, damn.
Whoa.
So... What else is going on there, brother?
Well,
do you want to play some more of the Hashish Eater?
We could do that, but why don't we just take another little musical interlude if you have another one we can play, and we'll attempt to give DML one last shot and see if we can get him on to talk about the tsunami, and if we can't, then we'll play some Terrence McKenna reading from the annotated Hashish Eater.
Okay, we're going to play a cut from... Spearhead, Michael Franti, Spearhead, Power to the Peaceful. And why not keep it on the... We'll keep it on the bomb. We'll link this up with the bomb thing. This is Bomb the World, Armageddon version.
Fire! Radioactive! Michael Franti, Legacy and LZ in the place. Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass. We getting wild. Check four.
Get the last word.
I don't understand the whole reason why you're telling us all that we need to unify. Rally round the flag and beat the drums of war. Sing the same old songs, we heard them all before. You're telling me it's unpatriotic, but I call it when I see it. When I see it's idiotic. The tears of one mother are the same as any other. Drop food on your kids while you're murdering the fathers. But don't bother to show it on CNN. Brothers and sisters, don't believe them that it's a war against evil. It's really just revenge engaged on the poor. It's by the same rich men fight terrorists wherever they be found. But why you not bombing Tim McVeigh's hometown? You can say what you want, propaganda television, but all bombing is terrorism. Chase down all our enemies. We can bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. And disease, we can
died. No one even really knows why. They told lies in the vision of fear. We yelled and cried, no one listened for years. We're like, who put us here? And who's responsible? Well, there's no debating, cause if they ask me, I'll say it's big corporations. World Trade Organization, trilateral action, international sanctions. Satan, seems like it'll be an endless price tag of war's tremendous. And most disturbingly, the death toll is so horrendous. So I send this to those that say the defenders. Send us into harm's way, we should all make a remembrance that this is bigger than terrorism. Blood is blood is blood in them. Love is true vision. Who would listen? How many songs it takes for you to see? You can bomb the world to pieces, you can't bomb it in the beast.
Chase down all our enemies. Run, run, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces.
Come on,
Lord, we can bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find the solution.
Yeah,
to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces.
Come on,
Lord, we can bomb it into peace. And I sing power to the peaceful. And I sing love to the peaceful. Yeah. I sing power to the peaceful. And I sing love to the peaceful. Yeah. We may even find the solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces.
Lord,
we can bomb it into peace.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the world wide digital mycelium on www.kootenaicooperadio.com. And if you're over the great waters, at 96.5 FM Kootenai Lake. Now, on Monday night / Tuesday morning, there is going to be a full moon. We can only hope that it brings in some decent winter weather, i.e. snow. But full moon is really a good time to do some tripping. It's a space where, you know, mushrooms, LSD, anything kind of psychedelic, it's kind of heightened at those full moon times, and it's a good astral marker for our lives. So the full moon, the lunar powers are, you know, transmitting at their fullest. And so myself, I really like to do mushrooms on a full moon because the moon is a influential part of a mushroom's natural cycle. I usually call them the flowers of the night because that's when the mushrooms kind of pop into existence, and a lot of times are regulated by the where the moon is and that kind of thing. So, you know, if you can get out to a nice remote place, preferably in the wilderness. I know it's a little rainy and chilly right now, but even if you can make it to a nice, you know, quiet place, you can do a ceremony. It's very simple. Basically, just cast off the wares of the world, cleanse yourself with some kind of smoke, incense, or sage, kind of a smudging kind of principle, get rid of the negative energy, evil spirits, that kind of thing. Then call in the spirits. Usually I do the four directions just because kind of in those four directions are all the nature of spirits. And, you know, do some praying, do some life visualization, you know, look at what your where your life is going, what you're doing. Be receptive to whatever the spirit has to offer. And, yeah, enjoy. It's myself, if I can't trip once every 28 days, then I'm in trouble.
Yep. Well, Dustin, it looks like we're going to have to give up on the David Mama Levine interview. We did manage to get in touch with his cell phone, and the person who is in charge of his cell phone does have David's number, but his cell phone keeps cutting out, so we can't get his number.
Oh, boy.
But what we're going to do instead, and this could be just as good, is we're going to play Terrence McKenna reading from The Annotated Hashish Eater, which is what we had attempted to do earlier. And Terrence, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like the Fitzhugh Ludlow of DMT, inspiring people to try this this new substance, dimethyltryptamine, with his quite poetic works and readings and poetry and all kinds of excellent writings. So it's fitting that Terrence McKenna should read this. Unfortunately, Terrence McKenna passed away a couple years ago, so those of you who fear hearing the voices of the dead must now turn down your radio. For the rest of you brave souls, here's Terrence.
This was the first of the American hashish exposés, and many feel the best. And what I'm going to read this morning out of a very rich potential group of readings is Fitzhugh Ludlow's description of his first encounter with the power of cannabis. So I begin the reading partway through the chapter called The Night Entrance. One morning in the spring of 1850-something, I dropped in upon the doctor from my accustomed lounge. "Have you seen,"
Welcome.
Said he, "my new acquisitions?"
Yes,
I looked toward the shelves in the direction of which he pointed and saw, added since my last visit, a row of comely pasteboard cylinders enclosing vials of the various extracts prepared by Tilden and Company. Arranged in order according to their size, they confronted me, as pretty a rank of medicinal sharpshooters as could gratify the eye of an amateur. I approached the shelves that I might take them in review. A rapid glance showed most of them to be old acquaintances. Conium, taraxacum, rhubarb. Ha! What is this? Cannabis indica? That, answered the doctor, looking with a parental fondness upon his new treasure, is a preparation of the East Indian hemp, a powerful agent in cases of lockjaw. On the